Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Yes, today we are going to be discussing the subconscious, which all of us have. But more than that, we're going to be talking about a component of life that so often we have to deal with. What is that? It's a four-letter word, fear. F-E-A-R, fear. I was reviewing some material this morning, and within, I'd say, 2 minutes, after I started reading and then listening to what was discussed in a conference meeting with some individuals, there were all kinds of things that were filling my head that weren't there because I wanted them there, but they were stimulated by what I was listening to. It creates emotion. It creates activation of belief systems. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. My guest, Friedman Schaub, the fear and anxiety solution. This is a man who has really wanted to achieve a breakthrough process that allows you to know that you can have dominion over that four-letter word, fear. Hi, Friedman. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Friedman, I know you're in France, which was really a surprise, and we just have this marvelous connection. Technology is an amazing thing, but we human beings still are human beings. And fear, anxiety, heck, I don't know of anybody who hasn't gone through that. Do you?
No, certainly. I mean, I can only talk about myself as well. So I had my fair share of anxiety, and it's, I think, a part of our human condition to, at some point in our life at least, deal with these emotions. And the problem is just that we don't really know how to do it. And so we are trying to get rid of them or push them aside, ignore them, demonizing them, and not really understand what is actually fear and anxiety about and what do these emotions try to tell us.
There are so many people that have approached this. Napoleon Hill in his book, The Law of Success, which was his original manuscript, addressed this because he had to face this himself. And he talked about the basic fears of human beings, the fear of being alone, the fear of being in poverty. You know, just what am I going to do? It paralyzes us. And I know it's happened to me. And when we can relate to people, when we can say, goodness, oh boy, do I understand what you're going through. Someone, when they're in the throes of the depth of their fears, they will hear those compassionate words and they'll go, you idiot, you couldn't possibly know what I'm going through. I know, I've said those words to myself. How in the heck do you think you know what I'm going through? You're not living in my body. But fear is
right.
Something that's common to everybody. Your parents were amazing people. They were German, and they, at a very early age, you saw the power of the mind at work, and it was through your dad. How
right.
Was that demonstrated? It started with a W, and I just was absolutely mesmerized by this.
Well, my dad was a countryside doctor of the old traditional kind that I think we find less and less here, and my mother was as well, and they really were, in my view, the role models for the mind-body connection and working with that, what I'm doing now, because they saw human beings as whole beings, and they didn't just focus on their symptoms or didn't just see one organ at a time. They always tried to include whatever they knew about their patients, their history, their background, their relationships, and of course their minds, their thoughts, their beliefs into their diagnosis. So that was already a very holistic and I think in many ways different approach to what we are used to. But when it came to the mind-body connection in action, they had this wonderful treatment for children that had warts on their hands. You know, often children at that time maybe they didn't wash their hands very much, so these viruses go into the skin and create these little warts that, you know, are just annoying, but they're not necessarily something dangerous. So my parents had this amazing big glass vial filled with some very powerful potion that they gave little vials from that to the kids and said, you know, here's your brush, here's your vial. A few times a day at the same time, you're going to brush this potion onto this wart, and it's going to disappear in a couple of weeks. And, you know, high success rate, worked. The kids were very empowered because, wow, I can do this. I can do it for myself. And they came back showing the little hands, all happy that the warts disappeared. And lo and behold, when it was my turn to get the treatment and I wanted to have a vial of this big, powerful potion, my dad took me aside and said, you know, this is just watercolor. This is actually only water that looks nice, but what really is important is that you believe it. So you don't need this little potion. You don't need the brush. All you need to do is just to know that those warts are going to go away, and they will go away. And lo and behold, through focusing on it and believing it, it went as fast away as if I would have used a little brush. So that was a wonderful demonstration of how our mind can actually take the healing into its hand and accelerate it.
I really found your personal story about your becoming a doctor. Obviously, you had wonderful role models as parents. And you started exploring some different modalities, and you discovered a Dr. Paul Tournier's book. It's called, in English, A Listening Ear. And it had been given to you by a friend, many years before. And it had just been sitting on your bookshelf. You had not even read it. It was just sitting.
That's right.
And this was a man who was a physician. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is the old country doctor of early America. This is a man who really, really cared for his patients. Tell us why that book had such an impact on you.
Well, I loved about his approach, and this book was written basically when he was in his 80s, at the end of his career, but he learned to have so much reverence and believe in his patients that he really stepped away from chasing the newest drugs and medications to treat illnesses to more empower people to actually heal themselves. And the way he did it was by inviting them often, the patients that especially were hard nuts to crack, people that just stayed in their chronic illnesses, didn't seem to get out of that vicious cycle of wanting to get better but not finding any evidence for it, and then just getting more and more depressed and frustrated. And but when he was facing patients like this, he invited them actually after the practice was closed over to sit by the fireplace, have a glass of wine or a tea, and just converse about life, about themselves. And what he found that these moments were the moments of breakthrough. These were the moments where he watched the people opening up. Something happened inside where the wall that had surrounded this chronic illness all of a sudden crumbled, and the real person showed up. And those were the moments where the healing momentum began, and he found the observations he made by just being able to listen and in many ways hold the space. He was holding the space for those people to basically being able to find the connection to themselves. Mm-hmm. That were the moments of healing. And I just found it very inspirational for many reasons, because, one, I always believe that we are way more powerful healers internally than anything we can get from the external side inside of us. So there is a lot of potential inside of us that I feel we haven't barely tapped into and also not believed in. And the other is that you know, when you work with patients, that you need to give them time and space to really get a sense of themselves, to open up, to feel safe. And then once you are in this healing state of feeling safe and comfortable, you know, physiologically, your parasympathetic nervous system kicks in and the healing just begins. And that's, I think, something very incredible and very powerful that I have certainly taken to heart in my practice.
I know as a counselor, it has been invaluable to me. This is something that I think many times we do know how to heal ourselves, but we need a sounding board somewhere. And it's not a sounding board of wailing and whining. We might want to give ourselves some of that. That's true. I don't know if you've ever seen the program Monk. This is a guy that has paranoias that have paranoias that have paranoias that have paranoias. And but he's a brilliant detective. And I thought whoever came up with this really has a tremendous writing team, because they are expressing so many different levels of the mind, versatility, flexibility, and scale, both of expansiveness as well as limitation. So I've always been a fan of that show. But one of the comments that you make in your book, and it's right in the beginning, when it comes to fear and anxiety and wanting to get to the root cause of it, a very important thing to be aware of is not to blame oneself for, let's say, holding on to the fear or having had experiences where they think they should have done something better, they should have been better. We all go through this because of societal situations, family environments, whatever we might have been involved with. So we're not to get into the blame game either. We're to be able to take active, conscious place and space with ourselves so that we can move on, so that we get unstuck. Am I right?
Absolutely. And it's also not about blaming others. You know, it's not about feeling like, well, this is my father's fault, my mother's fault, the teacher's fault. Blame has a great limitation because it keeps us stuck in the past, and we are on some level, you know, wondering or waiting for someone to free us from that blame that's basically the bedfellow of shame and guilt. So it's not really a healing energy to have. Mm-hmm. Having said that, it is still important that we are having a look at where the fear and anxiety comes from. You know, it is not something that we are attacked by. It's not something that's in our, you know, cereal in the morning. It's actually something that we are creating and we learned to create early on in our lives. There is a purpose why this deeper part of our mind, the subconscious, has been focusing on fear and anxiety, and those reasons and those root causes need to be evaluated and understood, not just intellectually, not just by analyzing them, but really by working with the subconscious so that the subconscious can let go of whatever it has been holding on to for dear life. Because that's basically what the subconscious does. It has been deciding at some point, well, you're way better off if you are anxious and afraid, if you're insecure and make yourself small. That's your way to move through life. And unless the subconscious is convinced of that's actually no longer necessary and it's not working, the subconscious will, like a faithful servant, continue to do the same thing over and over again. And that's why I think you know, we have to learn, when we do want to change the root causes of fear and anxiety, how to communicate with the subconscious, which is basically what the book is about.
Is there a case in particular that for you as a physician really comes to mind and made you as an individual aware of this even more succinctly than you had been before? Is there something in someone in particular where this really is a good example for?
You mean of the anxiety of what it can do to us, or of
How they got to the root cause and were able then to displace that anxiety with something that was more productive for them?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the people that I really just always think about as the magical transformation that can occur when you are really tapping into not only the root causes, but also into your potential, is a woman that came to me in her mid-50s that told me how much she's struggling with the new management of her company. She was very successful as a salesperson, but the company was sold to a new management, and the new management was pretty much her nightmare because they were all these very stern, angry white men that were pretty much only saying, well, either you're going to reach these numbers or, you know, you're out. And that mm-hmm. pressure was too much for her. She felt consistently not good enough. She felt consistently that something was wrong with her, and basically worked twice as hard as before, but at the same time felt just like a huge failure. And so she came to me with this deep anxiety, but also with depression that more and more was creeping into her life and clouding her mind. And we worked on, so where did this anxiety, this feeling of not good enough, really come from? And what she in our work remembered, and you know what came up as we tapped more into her past and into her subconscious, was a very distinct memory of her being a little girl, maybe 10 or 11 years old. One morning, her mother, who had a lifelong battle with depression, had tried to commit suicide. And she was basically carted off to the hospital and left her husband and two little girls. My client was the older one, at home. Now, the husband was completely overwhelmed with the whole thing and basically just shut down, went to work, and let the girls basically fend for themselves. In that moment, this little girl felt that the mother had abandoned them, the father had abandoned them, and she must be flawed. There must be something wrong with her because nobody wants to take care of her. Nobody wants to be there for her. And that left a deep imprint of this feeling of something inside of her was missing. Somehow she must be flawed. Mm-hmm. What she didn't realize, which was so powerful for her, that what happened next, and what happened next was that she actually internally decided, well, if nobody is there, I guess I'm going to have to take care of everything. So she, as this 10 or 11-year-old girl, started to take care of her little sister, who was just barely three, started to feed her, started to take care of her, took care of the household, and she did this for a few months. Until school finally said, well, where are you? Where's your daughter? To the husband, to the father, who basically just accepted that now this little girl was the one who was taking care of the household, and he was just continuing to go to work and not really take care of his daughters.
Mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. ability to step up, that ability to say, you know, I'm just going to take care of the one person that needs it even more, which is my little sister. I'm the one who is strong enough to basically hold this household together. She didn't see that. She had completely blocked that out, which is what beliefs do. But when she actually saw this from this higher perspective and saw how strong she actually is, how much compassion she had, how much she was actually able to really deal with such a difficult situation and still keep her heart open. She wasn't angry at her father. She wasn't even angry at her mother. She was simply compassionate, even at that age. That changed completely her perspective on herself. And she, henceforth, was able to actually face then, through further work, her managerial team with a sense of confidence and self-esteem, just knowing, I am proud of who I am because I see the bigger picture. I'm not letting myself be pigeonholed by your ideas and expectations. I know now that my truth is much more powerful than that. And all her anxiety and all her insecurity was gone.
It's amazing when we can get to that part of ourselves that allows us to have our own integrity and realize that we are who we are, and we can honor and respect that part of ourselves. And fear can come in, but we will know, just like she did, that there is that opportunity for us to stand true to that greatness, I call, within ourselves. You have a section in your book and saying how to find out what you want and how to get it. My goodness, people will say, oh, I want $1 million. Oh, I want this. Oh, I want that. But they're really not getting at the core of what it is that means the most to them. Let's go into that section a little bit, because we're living in very tumultuous times. You turn on the news, everything is going to hell in a handbasket. There's just all of this, be prepared. The earth is going to fall out of the universe. Be prepared. You're going to find that you're going to die from obesity. Be prepared. This is it. Everybody's going to be impoverished. We're going to run out of food. I'm telling you, I get stuff on my desk. If I bought into everything that I received, I'd be in a loony bin. I mean, it's just unbelievable. There is this attitude that we're supposed to have this fear. Without this fear, without this stress, without this anxiety, we're just not going to be able to make it in this world. And I can't tell you how many people live on that. They live on that. And then they wonder why their lives are so miserable when they have so much to be grateful for. They can't, because they're terrified that they're going to lose it. Let's go into this a little bit so we can empower people.
Yeah, I think these questions are so important because when we are in the place of anxiety and insecurity, we really see only one path, and that's a path of doom and gloom. And we don't really see that there is another path, there is another option. And, you know, the subconscious does that through these filters. You know, these subconscious filters are basically emotions and beliefs and things we're saying to ourselves. These filters are distorting and generalizing and deleting information from the outside, which, you know, is a good thing ultimately, because there is so much information that our little brain cannot really compute at all. So we have to have the subconscious say, okay, this is important and that's not important. But if you have an anxiety filter because you have been dealing with anxiety for a long time, of course, only these fearful messages will come through. If you have a filter of not feeling good enough, everything will look like a failure. You're just distorting it all. So actually being able to stop and say, okay, let's take a moment and look where I am right now. This is what has been happening. This is how I have been living. This is what I have been thinking. And what do I actually want instead? That opens a whole world for a person, because for the first time, they're actually directing their mind, and especially the subconscious, towards the place of choice. You know, we all of a sudden see, there are two ways. I can look at it this way, or I can actually strive for the other. And as an analogy, I like to tell people, when you are deciding, this is what I want to do. I want to buy a house. All of a sudden, these for sale signs are popping out at every corner of the street like mushrooms. Or you say, you know, you are in love with somebody and you're going to downtown. Well, you're going to see this person five times probably. Well, at least people that look similar like this, because you have taken the subconscious on a treasure hunt and basically directed the subconscious to find that what you want. And it's a very powerful tool just to basically widen your perspective, to know more what you want, to also know why you want something. You know, many people would say, well, what I want is to get rid of anxiety, and why I want it is because I suffer. That's not really enough, because you still basically focus on suffering and anxiety. You're not really giving a positive option that is replacing those old ways. And so just going through these questions in himself, and an abbreviated version you can actually find on the website, thefearandanxietysolution.com, to download, or also on the other website, cellularwisdom.com. It really just gets you already in a different space and gets your mind moving towards healing and growth versus staying stuck.
There are some wonderful questions that you bring out, and it's in the section about look who's talking. Our minds, we have thoughts that run through gazillions every day, And we, if we are wise, become mindful of the thoughts, and we'll examine them. We'll look at them. And I think if you study any of history, any stories about adepts, as they commonly are called, they'll say they reach a point where they can look at a thought and they'll examine it. If they don't like it, it goes into the mental trash can or the recycling bin of the universe. And that's fine. But I really like the question that you posed, because I think many times it's good to have these questions. Is this thought true? In other words, when you find that your mind is going along a certain path of statement, is it true? What is fact? And does it make me feel good? And then also the question, does this thought help me reach my goal? Those are very interesting questions to ask oneself, because it will bring you into that state of mindfulness. And I think, my goodness, we can do the same process in our associations with people, in our choices about the environments that we want to put ourselves in. Is it really what we want? Is it really going to place us where we want to be? And that puts us into the opportune positioning of having choice, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it also makes the pattern that we often find ourselves in, the spiral of negative thinking, be interrupted. This, you probably know this when, you know, you observe your own thoughts. When there is a negative thought starting, often it just chases the next one and the next one and the next one. And from just, you know, saying, well, I wonder what I'm going to do at work today, to, oh, I'm probably going to get fired by the end of the week, it's not very long. And that's that spiral of negative thinking that when you ask these questions, you actually interrupt, you stop. And what happens on a subconscious level, it's almost like a little shock to the system. It's like, oops, what? We are not going down into the catastrophizing path. We are not imagining the worst scenario just to make sure that we are prepared or that we are safe. Somebody pulls the reins and says, no, that's not what we're doing anymore. It's very powerful. And you mm-hmm. get the attention of the subconscious mind, which is ultimately at that step what you really want.
Now, I wanted to ask you, we'll be going to break fairly soon. Would you stay with me for another few minutes? Because you have a wonderful chapter. I'd love to have you stay with me. Thank you. Letting go. Now, for those of you listening, I know you all have your challenges. I have them. I mean, it's a part of life's experience. But what we do with it makes a difference. And being consciously present with something is very important. But there's another question. How do we let go of old baggage that we're carrying around? How do we get rid of it? Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss this. And I think you're going to find it interesting. I want to thank Friedman Schaub for staying with me. He's in France. Due to the wonders of technology, we are able to talk to you just like you were right across my kitchen table. So let's take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Donna Sebo. More good information to follow. We'll be right back.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Siebel. My guest today is Friedman Schaub, and he's in France. He sounds like he's right next door, right? Well, we're at the kitchen table of the Donna Siebel environment talking about fear and anxiety. And if you're just joining us, the book is The Fear and Anxiety Solution. Friedman has developed a breakthrough process so that you can work with your subconscious mind. Yes. You see, there's so much more to you than what you're even capable of being aware of. But what happens when we have a lot of emotional baggage from the past? Friedman, when we were on break, I was telling you, I have a client that has so much of this. And this woman is, she's literally caused herself to go into a health condition that is life-threatening. And she's been very abusive with her body, and she is an alcoholic, has been. I don't think that she is drinking at this time. But what I always saw whenever I was around her, what I would always feel, like a child that just was running around, wanted everybody to say, please like me, please like me, please like me. And even if you wanted to reach that child, it's as if she's saying to that child and herself, no, 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 no. You can't make me grow up. I don't want this. I don't want to do this. And yet, on the other hand, she wants to have love. She wants to have acceptance, but she keeps this self-destructive patterning. And I like to think that because of some of the circumstances she's gone through just recently, that maybe there's going to be a wake-up call because she's a beautiful human being. However, she has created this baggage. It's like a monumental boulder that weighs tons. She's got chains all around it. They're wrapped around her legs, her body, and she's just, I see, I can move this. I can move it. I can continue to carry it, and the boulder keeps getting bigger. Let's discuss how we don't need to keep the trash in our lives, the boulders in our lives that cause us to stay in modalities that we really don't want.
Well, you know, this is a perfect example for how it is not just a one-layered issue with fear and anxiety, and the way you wonderfully described it is clearly pointing out that there is a part of her that doesn't want to let go of the fear and anxiety, and that part of her, like you said, is on a developmental level probably very young, because that's where those early imprints happened. Now, there is, of course, this emotional baggage that is just piling up inside of us. It's almost like as if the subconscious in that state is a sponge that is taking on more and more and more scarciness and more anxiety. And the more, of course, of this baggage we have, the more we are, you know, like the proverbial bathtub that, you know, two more drops and it's overflowing, or the pressure cooker, a little bit more pressure and we exploding. So that's the reason why people, when they do have a lot of emotional baggage inside, feel just the smallest things can bring a tidal wave of emotion, of anxiety that they feel almost like drowning in. And we can release this emotional baggage, and they're going to tell you a little bit about it in a second, but I just want to point out that it is also really important to understand that this part of her that does have this anxiety is certainly feeling unsafe and is dealing basically with the belief that the world is not safe, that she's not good enough. And for that part of her, it is inconceivable to let go of this belief because there is nothing it can replace it with. There is a, you know, often we find ourselves in this identity of this is who I am. You're never going to let go of it. What's left of me? Who am I? There is just this confusion about it, so it's more comfortable and familiar to hold on to that limiting identity than to actually say, no, I want to let go and I want to grow. Mm-hmm. But when people are ready, and when people feel like I'm no longer in this conflict with myself, where a part of me wants to move forward and a part of me holds me back, when people are ready, there are methods like the method I describe in the book, the pattern resolution process, that actually allows you to let go of decades of emotional baggage on the subconscious level in a matter of 30 minutes or an hour. It basically is based upon two very important notions about the subconscious. One is the subconscious doesn't necessarily hold on to baggage because it's so much fun, but it holds on to baggage for one main, very important reason, which is we need to learn from the past. And if we are not learning from the past, what can we really learn from? You know, the future is nothing for us to learn from. The present is also very limited. So the library of our life to actually evolve, to grow, to become stronger, and so on, is the past. But we know that we don't really go into the past unless there is an emotion that pulls us back in there. And fear and anxiety are very strong emotions that really are like little red flags that tell us, let's revisit the past, let's go there and learn from it. And interestingly enough, once we actually learn from it, the subconscious is willing to let go of the emotion. But the emotions, and that's the second important understanding about this, is that the emotions of fear and anxiety are very often stored on a subconscious level in so-called patterns. And what that means is that we are repeating the same anxiety patterns over and over again, becoming invisible, trying to be vigilant, trying to be critical with ourselves. We have done this for years. So once you understand where this comes from, you understand what there is to learn from maybe two, three different events, you will find out, wow, these learnings are actually, we can extrapolate these learnings to other events, actually to all those events that fall in the same pattern. And the subconscious does that for you. It's literally a domino effect of learning and releasing, learning and releasing. And people feel, once they are able to let go of this baggage, as if there is a huge weight that has been finally lifted of their mind. And at times they even tell me, you know, I didn't know that I saw the world in black and white colors, and now I can see actually all the spectrum of the colors in my world. So it's a very powerful and wonderful experience to be able to let go.
Yes, it is. And Laura Sims, who is an internationally renowned storyteller, she made a statement that really resonated with you, and that was about the power of story. And she said, throughout history, storytelling was used as a powerful healing tool. I remember seeing a program done by the Smithsonian many years ago where they found that the quote-unquote witch doctors of Africa were phenomenal psychiatrists. They really... they were just stunned. And I always have to laugh at people because for some reason in our Western culture, unless someone has a PhD and has spent 16 years in a university, they don't think that you have a pound of common sense. I've seen this so many times. And sometimes a person has so much wisdom because they have been able to live life and they understand these aspects, and through the power of story, they're able to reach people. And this is age old. It's been around for as long as humans have been on this planet. And it has a healing perspective. It enables people to see options. You go into a number of different applications. They're very simple. They're not complex. You have suggestions about meditation, which I think is phenomenal. I swear that I'm not all that good at meditating because my mind seems to be like a zipper. It goes up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. Yet I can find that I'll be in that meditative process for an hour, and I have no sense of time. It felt like just a couple of minutes. So there's this shift that goes on in the brain, and it literally, for me, is very refreshing. I can be exhausted, and if I meditate, if I'm quiet, it just creates a shift that's phenomenal. And I think in our world today, when people look at meditation. They seem to think that it has to be something that they have to really, really work at. And I said, forget that nonsense. Just sit and be quiet for a while. Just sit and be quiet. Don't talk. You don't have to chant. You don't have to do anything. Unless you want to. You know, that's fine. Whatever works for you. But for heaven's sakes, just be quiet. And in our world, that's not something people do very much of.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, you know, a big problem, I think, in our society, that we need constant stimulation. And when we understand that constant stimulation means we are constantly absorbing information, we can very much imagine, whether we have anxiety or not, that basically we are filled up at the end of the day with external information that really distracts us from ourselves. This is why we often identify ourselves more with our surroundings or what other people are thinking of us than what we actually know about ourselves. And using meditation as a way of recentering and finding a connection with yourself is incredibly valuable and powerful. And I'm glad you said this. You know, often people feel like this is something for monks or something that are really just advanced beings. I cannot do this. And so with great hesitation, they try, they sit down 5 minutes, 10 minutes. The more they're sitting down, the more the mind is racing, the more uncomfortable they get. And then they give up frustratedly because they're feeling, well, I'm supposed to have my mind quiet and still. I didn't succeed, so once again I failed. That's not for me. And that's, of course, you know, not really what meditation is about. And I like the analogy of seeing meditation as house cleaning. And if you haven't done house cleaning in a while, well, there are lots of cobwebs and dust, and you just see the dust flying the first time you are cleaning your house. And the first time you're sitting down and doing a meditation, you see a lot of your thoughts and your dust flying, and that's okay. You know, that's actually a good thing. And when you are not trying to conserve or hold on to that dust, but let it fly out, you will actually, after the fourth or fifth or sixth time, notice, actually was easier this time. I felt actually a sense of calmer afterwards. And lo and behold, it becomes actually a staple of your sanity in life. And you cannot actually imagine going into the day without it or letting the day go by without it. So it's quite a wonderful muscle to train and to exercise. It just takes a little time.
Right. And everybody can do it in the way that suits them best.
Yeah.
You don't have to be
Absolutely.
A yoga contortionist. You can do it anywhere, anytime, any place. It is your right, your privilege. It doesn't cost you anything. But the benefits, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, are just phenomenal. Well, Friedman, we're out of time. My goodness, it's just been delightful having you as a guest. And I know you're busy traveling. You're in France. You're doing conferences, workshops, classes. And it's just such a wonderful experience having you on the show. Your book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, I think has so many practical applications. This book could become like a friend. And I'm one of these individuals. I love writing in books. I know those of you that are purists, you just shiver at that. Well, buy two copies. One you write in. And then the other one maybe you just keep for posterity or give to a friend. But I really think that you've given such wonderful tools in this book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution. And I know you've got two websites, thefearandanxietysolution.com, and everything's spelled out, thefearandanxietysolution.com. Also, cellularwisdom.com. So you have two websites that you can check out. And for those of you that are whizzes with a computer, go for it. Thanks again, Friedman Schwab. And I really, really want to say, keep up the work. I mean, keep communicating because it is so very much needed. And share it with your colleagues, too. I think a lot of doctors.
Thank you very much.
You are welcome. This is Donna Sebo, again, Friedman Schwab, and all you need to do is check out his website, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, or CellularWisdom.com. This is Donna Sebo. Stay with me. We've got more good information to share. I think you'll find it all very interesting. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you'd like to chat with me today is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need from you is your first name or initial. And, of course, I always love to know what part of the country or the world you're calling in from. And just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything that is pertinent to you. So, again, the telephone number is 888-627-6008. Well, we have got a dynamic week this week. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the secret of rock and roll. We're also going to be talking about money. Garrett Sutton is going to be with us. We're going to be talking about the establishment of a corporation, what you need to do, all kinds of things. And also this week we're going to be talking with Ken Kingley Dennis. He is in England. We're going to be talking about the dawn of the Akashic Age. Now, this is something that comes from a perspective of our being mindfully present about how we take life and make it work for us. It is really a very interesting perspective, and believe it or not, it's by scientists that are changing their modalities of thought. It's really significant. And then we're going to be speaking with Marvin Brown, and Marvin talks about how to meet people and talk to just about anyone. And also that same day, we're going to be talking about untying the knot. Dr. Danny Kaufman is going to be my guest. This is going to be quite a unique interview, and I think that we're going to find it very interesting. And then on Friday, we are going to have a best of Donna. Yes, I have some things that have come up, so we're going to be doing a rerun of a show. But we've got a great lineup this week. Don't miss it. And as soon as I establish what we're going to be playing on Friday, I will be letting you know. So that's the lineup. If you want to talk to me live today, 888-627-6008. Exhaustion. It happens to all of us. We are sometimes push, or we might be in an environment where our schedules are so crazy. If you're a business person, you're traveling one minute, you're on a plane, you've got time zone changes, all of this can work havoc with the body. Sleep is the proper medicine. It's okay to close down. One of the tricks I learned in my traveling, and I still utilize it, and it took me a while. This didn't happen overnight. But I learned that on the plane, if I took along a sleeping mask and sometimes even earplugs, especially when I was on long flights, and if I used meditation, I couldn't listen to anything because it was so loud on the plane. But if I just would go into my own space of quiet, I found myself totally refreshed. Now, this can be on a flight that's only 3 hours. It could be one on, you know, it could be 17 hours of flight. It is amazing how that shift has empowered me as a traveler. And it's just little things that we can do. Well, sometimes to keep ourselves prime and fit and alert, we may need to take a cat nap or do little things for ourselves that allow us to refresh. Now, I learned that years ago when I was working in environments that were so confining. I worked for an insurance agency. We were in this little tiny cubicle. They drove me nuts on my lunch hour because I'd reach a point where I felt like I was suffocating. This was just me. The environment was drab. The confinement was just awful. And it was just totally something I was not happy with. And so consequently, on my lunch hour, I broke protocol. I didn't go out to lunch with everybody else. I went out for a walk. I actually found a place in the building where I could be by myself. And without having been taught this, I just sat quietly. I would just reflect or I'd write. But more than anything else, I just quiet myself down. And I found that it enabled me to handle the feelings of frustration and confinement that I was experiencing. You can try it. I think it might work for you, too. You know, one of the things that happens with the brain is that it can take us. It's a phenomenal instrument. The brain is just incredible. The mind is unlimited. The brain is the, what I call, the computer system that you go through. And one of the things that they have found out about the brain, and they've been doing so much study with texting. We all know how you don't text when you drive. This is bad news. This is not something you do. More accidents are caused by this kind of ridiculous stuff than you can imagine. I've seen people with cell phones up to their ears. They're glued to them, and they're driving, but their eyes are not paying attention to what else is going on around them. They really are not, even if they have a Bluetooth in their ear. I've seen it. So we need to be mindfully present when we're driving. However, there is a term that has just come to my attention. It's called dystexia. Have you ever heard of it? It's dystexia. Now, what this means, this is a new word. It means an inability to text coherently. Do you know what they've discovered? They find that you can tell if someone could possibly have a stroke or might be in the process of having a stroke. That's right. There was a scientific conference, and there was a 40-year-old man who was sending texts to his wife while he was on a business trip. They didn't make any sense. It was just unbelievable. So she wanted him to go see a doctor. She talked to the doctors, told them what was happening. He didn't seem to have any problems with speaking. There was nothing wrong with his communication capacities. But they gave him a smartphone, and they asked him to type, "The doctor needs a new BlackBerry." This is what he wrote. "The doctor needs NDDDS a new BB." Now, they ask him to look at his text. Did he notice any errors? He said no. The doctors, because of this, were able to determine that he had had an acute ischemic stroke. That's right. Now, what is this? It's when a clot blocks blood flow to the brain. Now, text messages are time-stamped, and they can even help establish when symptoms begin. So this may, as much as it is a pain in the neck, texting, and dangerous when you're driving, and we've got all kinds of negatives that have been said about it, this may end up becoming a medical tool that will help physicians figure out what's going on in the brains of people and maybe enabling them to bypass some negative situations. Fascinating, huh? This is Donna Sebo. Remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take care. God bless. Enjoy this gift, this wonderful day that you've been given. Look at life as a joy of experience. No matter what's going on, there's an old saying, this too shall pass. Something better will come along. Be open and receptive to it. God bless. Thanks for being with me today. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.